Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to the KRFY Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY Panhandle Community Radio. It's Tuesday, September 8th, and I'm Susie Prez, one of your co-hosts. Good morning, Chris.
And I'm Chris Bessler, the second co-host around here. Good morning, Susie.
It's really nice to see your smiling face over there. And we're here in the studios of KRFY with our guests this morning. Do you want to introduce them, Chris?
Sure. We're here with former city clerk Helen Newton and former councilperson Helen Newton. Say hi, Helen.
Hi, and thanks for inviting me.
And also a Sandpoint Reader editor, Cam Rasmussen. Mm-hmm. Say hi,
yes.
Cam.
Well, hello.
And we're going to be talking about the city election and issues that are likely to be up for the city this year. The election's coming up on November 3rd, but a key date just passed, and that is the date for candidates to file for election. And it actually held a couple of surprises that we're going to be talking about. One surprise being that there's only the incumbents have filed for the city council seats. Now, last year we had 9 people file for only 3 seats. So I think a lot of folks were expecting there was going to be a lot more filings this year. But we do have a race for the mayor. So that's what we're going to be talking about today, as well as the various issues that the candidates are going to be talking about, or what our guests here may think they should be talking about.
And get a sense of the mood in the community and the city as it stands right now going into this October election or November election time. Yeah. So that will be really fun. But before we get to that, let's hear a little bit of the weather from the National Weather Service. I remember not too long ago, we were so happy to see the rain. Well, guess what? We've had some rain, and it's really nice. Right now, currently from the National Weather Service, it's 46 degrees out. We have a slight chance of showers today with patchy fog, about a 20% chance. The high today will be 65 or around that. As we know, the weather is always around 65. Low tonight, mostly cloudy and low around 46. And then the rest of the week, I see sunshine on this little weather map on the computer. Highs 73 and all the way up to 81 on Friday and sunny. So it will give the tomatoes a chance to ripen, because they're just sitting there shivering every morning right now. And the lows through the week will be about 48. So there you go with the weather from the National Weather Service.
And also going on outside, our sunrise this morning was at 6:13 a.m. Sunset will be at 7:13 p.m. The lake remains at full pool. It will for at least a couple more weeks, so the Army Corps is telling us. And despite all that rain, we're still in a high fire danger situation. One of the ways they measure that is by, not by the amount of rain that's falling, but by the moisture content in the various plants. And as I understand it, the plants, they've been dry for so long, they went dormant, and they haven't really started to take up, they haven't awoken yet from the rains we've had. So things are still very dry out there, and people have to exercise great caution out in the woods.
And the national forests are still closed, is my understanding. Cam, you would know that a little bit more. I know the reader really is posting a lot of what's going on out there.
That's my understanding right now. We're still kind of getting back to speed with everything that's happened. But, yeah, anyway, caution is always of great importance during this time.
Yeah, it's not all the national forests are closed. It's just some areas actually down south, I believe. Firewood cutting restrictions are in place, however. You can only cut firewood until 1 p.m. Currently. So be careful out there.
Okay.
Yeah. What else has been going on around town, Cam? We just came off a holiday weekend. It's been fairly quiet. They had Fall Fest up at Schweitzer. I don't know if you happened to get up there.
I did not, but I saw pictures from it. It looked like everybody had a great time. In the news business, weekends like this are always an interesting thing to come off of, because everything is essentially shut down, aside from all the service industries. And so that really means that, you know, we don't have a lot to do either. And so, but at the same time, you know, it seemed like everybody got out, had a good time, enjoyed the fall weather for a change, you know, maybe got their coat out for the first time in a while. I know I did, so I went and saw Chris Herrens play over the weekend, and that was a lot of fun.
And so. That's No Service?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I thought that that was really well done.
So. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And has that run now? Is it going to be on again another week?
It's done now.
Okay.
So if you didn't go to see it, you missed out.
Yeah, and he is a local playwright, right? He's written several plays.
Yes,
now.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So among the things in the news this week I thought was interesting, the Reader had a pretty interesting story on, I guess you'd say, the trend in some of our local businesses that have been purchased by out-of-the-area companies.
Mm-hmm.
Among those would be Quest is one that was purchased by a Japanese company. Of course, Columbia Bank is a very significant part of our used to be the Panhandle State Bank, very significant part of our community, was purchased or merged with a bank from Tacoma, right? Columbia Bank.
Right.
They're based in Tacoma. And as the author of that story, Cam, what do you think the impact on the city is being of some of these mainstay businesses being now owned from out of town?
Well, according to the economists that I talked to, the impact so far has largely been positive. Of course, we've run into a couple of close shaves, as the story gets into, with, for instance, Leadlock and the company that now owns it, threatening to move it outside the area over east to New York, where it is based out of. Of course, that's very bad for the community, you know, potentially dozens, I think even getting into the hundreds when you consider the jobs that are affected by the jobs that that business maintains in the community, that would be lost. And
what's the status of that at this point? But Leadlock's committed now to be in town, right?
They're committed in town. They've expanded throughout what used to be, I'm not sure if it's still called now, the Bonner Business Center, but it used to be a business incubator. And at the time, the city was faced with the hard choice of, well, what are we going to do with these businesses that, you know, have been here for a while? They are saying that they need all of the space, otherwise they're, you know, going to have to move elsewhere. So, of course, there's really also a good story in the Inlander a week ago that really gets into the Inlander story, that was probably a couple of years ago, I think, that came out. That really got into the just how heartrending of a situation that was for pretty much everybody involved. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
One concern, of course, was Coatta Creek closed a little over a year ago now. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's probably just completed all its layoffs only about a year ago. And one concern, of course, was that was really going to harm the community economically. What do you think the feeling is now by the folks that are watching the economy about the impact that Coatta Creek closing had on the town?
You know, it seems like things are looking a little bit positive. I know that the economic development folks here in town, people that I talked to, you know, Jeremy Grimm before he left the city, when I talked to him about this, in the months following the Coldwater Creek closure, he seemed to be fairly optimistic about the diversity of industry in Sandpoint. You know, where something like a Coldwater Creek closure might not necessarily be a death blow because there are so many thriving businesses here in town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like one of those situations way back in the day where you're almost entirely a resource extraction-based economy, and when those opportunities dry up, you're not really sure quite where to go from there. So,
I think that's kind of what we're learning is we have a broader economic base here than we did probably 30 years ago, and that's helping us weather this. And I think, as your story pointed out, on the plus side of this out-of-area ownership, Quest, for instance, is looking at actually adding a bunch of jobs. They have more capital now to work with.
Yes, that's correct. And they initiated several months ago a pretty dramatic expansion plan, which they're adding onto their facility. Soon they'll add onto their workforce. And, of course, that's only a good thing. More jobs is obviously great, and it's just really encouraging to see just the interest, I guess, and how much of a splash they've made in the aviation community as a whole with their product. So,
which is the Kodiak airplane.
With the Kodiak airplane that is so well suited for these inhospitable, undeveloped airfields and things like this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, we are in the studio today with, that's Cameron Rasmussen from the Sandpoint Reader. We're also here with Helen Newton, former city clerk and former city council person, because we're actually going to be talking about the upcoming city election. The election is November 3rd. However, a key date for the election just came and went on Friday, and that was the deadline for candidates to file to be on the ballot. But Helen, as you mentioned, it's actually the last chance for somebody to get into the election.
It's October 6th. That's the final date for registering as a write-in.
Right. So somebody could still elect to run if either city council. There are three open city council seats, and there's the mayor seat is up for election this year. And our mayor, Kerry Logan, is not running for re-election. The candidates that have filed and who will be on the ballot are, there are two for mayor, it's Mose Dunkel and Shelby Ronstad. And for the city council, as I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, whereas last election, 4 years ago, we had nine individuals that went for, actually, no, only 2 years ago was the last election. We had nine individuals that were going for city council. This time we only have the three incumbents, who are Bill Aitken, Thomas Eddy, and Deb Fragoso. So, Cameron and Helen, I guess I'd start the conversation by saying, so, very low turnout. Does that, I mean, typically you see a high turnout when people are really dissatisfied with things. Does that mean that people are generally satisfied with the city, or is it just apathy, or how would you interpret the small turnout that we have for the election? Helen, I'll start with you.
It's not unprecedented that only incumbents put their names on the ballot. In 2000, three council members put their names on the ballot, and we had a huge race for mayor. We had probably six or eight candidates for mayor, yet we had a 4% turnout that year, the lowest turnout in the history of the city.
And that was the year that Paul Graves ran for mayor.
Yes.
And he ended up winning, but there were some pretty unusual candidates that were running against him.
That would be fair to say.
Well, didn't we have one fellow that, I don't know if he was an avowed white supremacist, but some pretty interesting, I don't know, colorful characters.
Colorful would be a good word, yes.
In that election, there was a lot of interest in that mayor's race, but there was a tiny turnout. What is an average turnout for a city election?
Oh, the highest we've had is 41% in 2002 when David Sawyer ran against Ray Miller and John Conlon was also on the ballot. That's our highest turnout. If we get 10 or 15%, people go, whoa, a lot of people voted. It's pretty sad.
It is pretty sad,
very sad.
I'll tell you.
That is shocking. Yeah. Not only sad, but shocking.
Yeah.
So what, why is there so much, would you call it apathy?
Apathy, yes.
Because the city really is important. I mean, we have county, city, state, but the city is our core of the activity. And
but even at the county level, you'll get less than 50% every time. Mm-hmm. I mean, over 50% of the people simply don't vote. And there are 4,000 registered voters in Sandpoint.
And that we're talking about the percentage of registered voters. We're not talking about the percentage of people that are eligible to vote.
No.
That percentage would be even lower than the actual voters would be a lower percentage of those that are actually eligible to vote.
But I think at 4,000 registered voters in the city of Sandpoint, you've pretty much picked up everybody. There'll be a handful of people that'll register the day of election.
Mm-hmm.
But
So what do you think could make the difference to get people involved? And even with the fact that we have these incumbents for the council positions and the race between two people for the mayor, you know, how else can people get excited and involved and informed about what's going on in the city and bring people's interest to that subject?
Well, radio, Susie.
Radio
will do it.
Listen to the radio. I want to say that partway through this interview, we will play a song, and I'll turn the phones on. So if there's anyone out there listening right now and has a question, your voice won't be on the radio, but we can take your question, and we'll ask one of our guests
your question. We should mention the reason we operate it that way, where there's no call-in. Mm-hmm. We're just not set up to handle
live call-ins,
mm-hmm. live and call-ins with our equipment here.
And that number, just so you can write it down now if you're listening, is 265-2992. So when we play a song, you can call us with a question. But anyways, back to what we were talking about, Helen.
Well, in preparation for this program, I surveyed informally 28 people that live in and around Sandpoint. They've been here from 10 to 80 years. They're employers, employees, I mean, a wide spectrum of people. And to see if their issues, what they thought are issues, compared to mine, if I was on track. And the top three issues that came back, and all of which were in my top three as well, was number one, the administrator. First of all, do we need the administrator? And second of all, major concerns about the hiring process. The second issue was parking downtown. And the third issue was transparency. Nobody knows what's going on in government. And frankly, in order to know what's going on, the public has to rely on people like Cameron and people like you on the radio, because otherwise they don't know. People don't go to those meetings. Even as many letters to the editor as there were against an administrator, I went to the meeting where that budget was passed. Nobody was there to speak. So people feel like they're just left out of the process, and finally, they just give up.
One question I have, when you're mentioning going to the city council and that council meeting where they were talking about the city administrator and the budget, if 25 or 30 people had shown up and had said a majority of them were not in favor of the city administrator, would that have changed the direction of the decision on the budget?
I don't think so, because,
okay. Because
the format for city council meetings is, at the beginning, there's a period for public comment. Mm-hmm. You get 2 minutes. 25 people come. They each speak their full 2 minutes. It's 50 minutes. That's an hour gone. But there's no exchange with the elected officials. You aren't in a conversation. You aren't in a debate. You just express your opinion. You hope they're listening and that it'll maybe change their perspective. But it doesn't seem to.
And what has happened in my experience, I don't believe it could have happened at this budget, you know, basically public hearing, where they were getting the last public comments in before they passed the budget. And I do understand that that's held to a pretty important time frame where things need to be in place by such and such a time. So, but what I have seen in the past is if there is a vigorous enough public response, then very often the city council will table the issue to consider it further. Public comment, I do believe, does have an impact. It is something that elected officials consider duly. But, you know, throughout this whole process, my understanding is that only a handful of people throughout the workshopping of the budget ever really turned out to talk about their concerns with this city administrator.
To that point, I'd ask you, Helen, by the time we get to the actual date to approve the budget, it's pretty much a done deal.
It's set in concrete.
It's pretty well set in concrete. Yeah. So that would, of course, kind of chill the desire of people to come. But there are times during the budget consideration process for people to come in during the budget workshops.
Yep, those are all public meetings.
Those are public, but they don't get well publicized. So I think a lot of people, and I don't know that a lot of people necessarily consider, okay, I'm opposed to the city administrator. And really the way to really oppose it is to make sure it's not funded. So I don't know if people make that calculation.
No.
In terms of giving their responses or their comments to the council.
There was one budget workshop. I reviewed all the council meeting minutes from the last 2 years on July 3rd, the day before the 4th. How many people do you think, oh, wow, this is really important. I need to get there. They're thinking about the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So
a timely issue.
So how many in past years, Helen, from your experience? Now, you were city clerk for what years?
24 years, 1980 to 2004.
And in past years, when you were there as clerk, how many budget workshops were there? How many opportunities were there in the past?
Oh, oftentimes this was a complaint of council members. Quite often, we'd have 6 or 8 budget workshops. I mean, we would go on ad infinitum, and the people would say, we're giving up our summers for this. That's why some people didn't run again after they found out how much was involved. But there doesn't seem to be that much even council involvement anymore.
To that point, this time, if they only had one budget hearing, can you go over everything in one budget hearing? Were there other meetings where things were considered?
Not that I saw in the minutes, and these, you know, they have to provide minutes for every, and it wasn't July 3rd, I'm sorry, it was the third meeting in July, so it was not July 3rd, but it was a 2.5-hour meeting. I'm sure that they went over everything with the department heads, but by then you have to remember that there's been months of work leading up to that when the council finally sees a document. The mayor, the department heads have all been working on this budget.
So let's talk just briefly on one issue that we're talking about, really, is the city administrator position. Now, there were some folks that came to one of the council meetings and asked a lot of questions about that, I know.
Yes.
So it's come under some criticism. And there's the criticism of the city administrator position first has been, do we even need a city administrator? And then as Helen, you mentioned, there's been criticism about the process to hire a city administrator, because it seems like the schedule is pretty accelerated.
Yes. And, you know, some people look at this, and I got the through public records request, the salaries that we pay to the 8 current department heads, and we pay them $656,000 a year plus benefits. Add 30% to that, so you're getting close to 800 and something. I think they're proposing to pay a city administrator a little over 100. These department heads have over 90 years of experience among them. One of the things in the job description for the city administrator is that he or she is going to oversee these department heads. I think they're perfectly capable of running their departments. They've shown that, and they're doing a good job. I'm not opposed unilaterally to this concept. What I am concerned about is that the process we're using looks a little bit like amateur hour. We're asking them to fill out the same application form that a summer parks or public works employee fills out. We're saying if you want to, you could attach a resume. We're not saying to them, here are the issues. Please give us a letter telling us how you would approach these from your experience or what you might do about parking, for example, or transparency in city government. They're not asking for any of that, and they're also not putting out there when the process, how it unfolds. Who's going to be the interview team? Who's going to make the decision? Is there going to be a meet and greet? You know, we don't know anything.
Has there been, during this initial process, to ask for this position to be in the budget and things like that, what is the main argument for having a city administrator? You said it's to oversee all these other 8 department heads. Is that the main argument, that there's no consistency in the city government?
Cam, why don't you give your insight on that one?
All right. Well, my understanding is that to start out with, there is kind of a lack of clarity when it comes to the responsibilities of the mayor in this town. And some, it changes every time a new mayor comes in. Some mayors take a strong hand, some take a weak hand. Some, you know, delegate to all of the department heads. Some, you know, get their hands fairly deep into the operations of the city government. And I think what the city wants to do from just the administrative standpoint is to have a figure that it has been designated to take care of these responsibilities. And to that point, one of the talking points that the city brings up when discussing the possibility of a city administrator looking now more and more like it's going to be a reality, that this is going to provide continuity between administrations. And so when I talked to Carrie Logan about this position, she was talking about how there have been cases where as one administration has gone and ceded to another, there have been grant opportunities that have fallen through the cracks. There have been various projects that, because of whether they be different priorities or just, you know, it was one of those things that slipped from mind as they were passing the reins, have, you know, these opportunities have evaporated. And so I think continuity and just overall cohesiveness by providing a singular position for this, all of the managerial aspects of local government, I think those are the big the big talking points in favor of the administrator position. I talked to.
One thing I've heard over the years as well is that the mayor. We now have a strong mayor system here, and that's not going to change with the city administrator. Is that correct? It's the mayor still can hire and fire city employees.
That would be up to the administrator.
That would be. Is it actually up to the administrator? The administrator does not have authority over the mayor.
The administrator is to defer to the council and the mayor in matters of policy. And so the council and the mayor define the policy through your normal public process, and then the administrator's job is then to enact that policy. So, yes, there would still be a public process to these big decisions.
I think that that's a very hollow position to take about the continuity. Consider this. Every city, every county, every state, the federal government have an election in November. Between November and January, when the new officials take place, this would be saying that every government, every form of government in this country would have to have an administrator position in order to assure that continuity. That continuity comes from the department heads and the employees. It doesn't depend on one person. And what happens if that administrator leaves? Then where does the continuity go?
Of course, the continuity is lost there.
You got 3 or 4 months. You got to replace that person.
I think that's a fair point.
Very hollow.
So our current department heads aren't really going to be free to give their opinions on this matter.
No, absolutely
not. Certainly not publicly. But is there any sense about how they feel about it that you might know, Cameron or Helen?
I have no.
Couldn't comment on that, no. Okay. You know, and that's probably to be expected, I would think, yeah.
Well, okay. For one thing, the mayor's proposing this. How many department heads are going to stand up and say, pick me, I don't agree with you? They're not going to do that. They have their jobs.
Yeah, of course. It makes it difficult for them, even if they are opposed to it.
But you're not going to say anything.
So we are going to, you're listening to the KRFY morning show. We're in the studio this morning with Cameron Rasmussen from the Sandpoint Reader, Helen Newton, former city clerk, former council woman, and we're talking about the upcoming city election and various issues are going to be on the be up for discussion by our candidates this year. I did want to mention it, and I did mention it earlier. There's a very important ballot question that's going to be on the ballot this year, and that is 1% sales tax to finance construction of the grandstands at Memorial Field. We're going to want to talk about that a little bit more. But I think we're at a good time to take mm-hmm. a little musical interlude here.
Yep, and we're going to invite our listeners right now to call in to 88.5 KRFY if you have a question for our guest, Cam Rasmussen. And did I say that right?
That's Cameron Rasmussen.
Cameron Rasmussen.
Yeah.
And Helen Newton. And if you have a question, call us at 265-2992. We're going to hear a song right now. It's kind of appropriate. It's Iris DeMent singing Our Town. Yes. And I'm going to turn the phone on in just a second. That's 265-2992. Give us a call. Now I sit on the porch and watch. And that was Iris DeMent, Our Town. Appropriate song for this morning, this Tuesday morning show with Chris and Susie, and this is 88.5 KRFY. We're in the studios with our guests, and we asked if anyone was interested in calling in, and we did get a phone call from a listener, and her question was, now that the budget has been set, and if you strongly disagree, or if there's a group of people that disagree, is there any recourse, is there any way to still have an impact or influence on that budget decision?
Well, my understanding is just because the funding has been cleared for certain elements of the budget this year, or coming up here, it doesn't mean that the city necessarily needs to act on it. And so, you can always write in comments, you can always send in comments, mail them in, email them to the city this is a process that goes, that's available to the public throughout any public discussion. That would be, one option at your disposal. You could always come to a council meeting. There's a section at the beginning of every meeting devoted to just any message that you want to send to the council and the mayor. So that's another option. There are definitely... you definitely have recourse in cases like this.
We should say that one thing about passing a budget is that if an item's not budgeted, you can't go out and add it in after the budget's been approved.
That's right.
So in a sense, there would still be an opportunity for people. If they opposed in this particular budget item, we're talking about the city administrator, mm-hmm. There would still be an opportunity for them to influence their council and the mayor and the decision makers.
Over your many years, Helen, in the city government, have you seen citizens' opinions and declarations of discourse or not being really happy with something make a difference in decision-making in the government process?
Absolutely. I think, while I may not be in agreement with, this happens fairly often. Look at the 3 or 4 hour forum that you hosted, Chris, on the coal trains. Didn't that have some impact on the council and what they did? I think so too.
One instance I can remember is when they were considering approving the curve.
My sense, huge turnout.
Yeah, we had huge turnout. My sense going into it that the city was definitely leaning to approve it, mm-hmm. But the turnout there was so passionate and strong about the safety problems that putting that huge intersection there at Boyer and Highway 2 would create was that it changed opinions and ultimately they looked for a different way to do that.
This has been my experience too. I hear these comments from time to time that, with people saying, what would my involvement ever change anything? And that to me is just a real cop out because I've seen it time and time again where there have been even just a handful of people coming out and saying, listen, we're a little bit concerned about this. And that's influenced the decision-making process. And so, this lack of involvement, I think, is the one thing that's going to guarantee that your voice isn't heard. So just keep that in mind.
Fill a room. It makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's great. Get involved. You can make a difference.
So, let's skip back to the city election and some of the issues that are going to come up. Helen, you brought up that you posed an informal survey out there in preparation for this show. That's great. And the second issue you heard that was most talked about was downtown parking.
Parking. And let me add that I did also include in this survey all of the candidates. And the first one I heard back went from was Mose Dunkel, who's running for mayor. I did not hear from Councilman Rogstad at all. I heard from Councilman Aiken and Councilman Eddy. And late last night, I had an email from Councilwoman Fragoso, who said she didn't have time to respond. But tied number one were administrator and parking. And what people kept saying to me in their emails was the parking problems downtown are driving people away from Sandpoint, not just the residents, but visitors. People don't like to come here and find that they shop and have lunch for 2 hours and 15 minutes and come out and have a $25 or $50 ticket. I also had a comment from one about with the bump outs and the swales, the configuration for handicap parking spaces has changed, and that is making it very difficult for people who are in wheelchairs and need space to get those wheelchairs out of their vans and so forth. But it's a big issue. And the other thing is the transparency thing comes back to this is a prime example. We know that the city went to Diamond Parking, but do we know anything since then? Do we know how much the city has paid Diamond Parking? Do we know if Diamond Parking has brought in enough to cover that expense? It's a blended issue here, but parking is truly on people's minds.
So what would you, and actually the city had a parking workshop just a few weeks ago, I think.
I understand that they at least intended to schedule one.
I went to it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, but I mean there was supposed to be one between the business owners and Diamond, wasn't there, as an outcome of that meeting?
And I don't sure what.
And I don't know if that's
I don't know if anything that if that has transpired yet. Right. But there weren't, to tell you the truth, there weren't a lot of people that spoke there either at that workshop for people to articulate what their concerns are about downtown parking. And when Diamond was awarded the contract for parking enforcement, that was debated about quite a bit, I think. The city prior to that had their own officers doing the parking enforcement, and there was a lot of discussion, should we get a third party, like a contractor, to handle that for us? Now it's been about 2 years, I think, that Diamond's been...
not quite, perhaps, but getting close.
Yeah. and you know, we are hearing a lot of complaints that the enforcement is more
stringent.
More stringent, yes. But isn't that the idea of enforcement? To play the devil's advocate here, the problems that came out at the city workshop were the folks that spoke were mostly business owners, and the business owners are the ones that come and speak at these things feel that a lot of the downtown parking gets taken up by employees who are working in the downtown. Even some business owners themselves, they park, they take up all the parking spaces, and it doesn't leave any place for the visitors and the customers to park. So doesn't that ask whether or require that there be stringent enforcement on this issue? Pam or Helen, give us your thoughts on that. And Helen, I know you will have thoughts on it.
Well, Helen, if you want to go first,
The thing is, I mean, we had parking complaints all the time I was city clerk. I mean, the complaints would come into the mayor's office. You've got to do something about this. I got this ticket. The problem, everybody acknowledges what the problem is, that the owners and employees of the businesses are parking in front of their businesses and they're taking up this valuable space. Until the city finds a way to enact an ordinance that will penalize them sufficiently to discourage them from doing that, nothing's going to change.
And what about providing a parking lot for those city employees and business owners that isn't 10 blocks away? I mean...
Well, and this is one of the options that came up in that parking workshop. Mm-hmm. You had a suggestion that they transform the current city lot into public parking space and handle parking around the rest of the area with meters, which, who knows what kind of an expense that would be to install all those meters in. And of course, as the Diamond Parking official at the meeting said, you know, once again, comes with its upsides, comes with its downsides. So there's, I feel, not going to be a perfect approach. There's not going to be a solution that's going to make everybody happy, and that's the unfortunate reality. But I feel that, given the dissatisfaction, maybe there's an approach that might be a little bit better. Who knows? So.
Yeah, well, we do have the city parking lot, and it is very close to the all the businesses on First Avenue and Second Avenue. It's not a very far walk, but of course, when you're wanting to go to one of those establishments, I do it myself. I usually take a lap down First Avenue just to see if there's a spot that I can take, and then if there isn't, I drive over to the city parking lot. I guess one question would be, could the city parking lot be, which is located between what, second and third
Church and Oak.
Could that be utilized more efficiently to get the downtown employees onto that?
Well, here's an interesting, Chris, you'll remember Tom Hudson and the study he did for the city of Sandpoint. And he told the city how far a person is willing to walk from where they park their car to their destination shop or restaurant. Can't remember the distance. It wasn't very far. So I asked Don Carter at the city to get out a map and show me what, from the center of the city parking lot, how far it was to the Panada. That was further than people are willing to walk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To that point, I think that, you know, that could be one of the attractive ideas to making the city parking lot the free parking for people that need to be parked downtown 8 hours for their work. You know, that is, a walk from the parking lot to your workplace, and you're going to be there all day. Yeah, that's a little bit less of a stretch than, hey, I want to get to, for instance, Arlo's. That's several blocks away, and I've got to park here and hustle on over. And, of course, then you have to factor in that many people are handicapped or elderly, and they have a whole, they have a whole other thing to deal with there. That's a big pain. Yeah. So,
remember, the city beach holds how many hundreds of cars, and it's absolutely free.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody who works downtown could park there for free all day,
right.
But it's too far for them
and
to walk.
And it's a little more than two blocks.
It is.
Yeah, to the downtown.
A quarter of a mile or so.
Well, I don't mind walking from City Beach. I didn't realize that was an option.
Yeah.
But to go all the way across Fifth Avenue when maybe I need to go in and out twice and run my mother to her doctor's appointment, and I'm here for 9 hours, sometimes 10. I can't really afford the city lot with its $2 and $3 an hour or something after the first free hour. So I'm way the heck out there. But City Beach, I didn't realize is an option.
But you can.
And that's
also
only what, 3-4 blocks, and it's a beautiful walk.
Yeah, employees can buy a monthly permit for the city lot as well. I'm not sure how much that is anymore. But
I didn't know that.
Yeah, okay. That's downtown parking. That is a tough question.
Another issue. We've
solved that.
Yeah. Helen, as you know, that's been a problem
forever.
Forever.
So it's a matter of managing it and getting the word out. And now we know about the city beach parking lot that we can use. And anyways, those issues will always be there. It sounds like.
Yes.
And Chris.
And remind our listeners, they're listening to 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show with Chris and Susie. And we're talking this morning with Cameron Rasmussen from the Sandpoint Reader and former city clerk, former councilwoman Helen Newton, about the upcoming city election and some of the issues that are going to be talked about or should be talked about. Now, as we mentioned a couple times, the for council, we have 3 seats open. Only the incumbents have filed for the council so far. That's Bill Aitken, Thomas Eddy, and Deb Fragoso. Those will be the only names you see on the ballot. It is still possible for people to file as write-ins, and that you have until October 6th. If you decided to, if you were out there listening and wanted to run for city council, you could still put your name in the hat. Of course, it's always harder, much harder to run as a write-in than as somebody that's on the ballot. We do have a race for the mayor. Mose Dunkel and Shelby Ronstadt have both put their hat in the ring for mayor. And it's our intention here at CareFY to get them in and have an interview with them, certainly as we get closer and the election comes up on us. But you know both individuals, Helen and Cameron. Who are these two candidates for mayor?
Well, Shelby Ronstadt is the council president, current council president. He's coming from this with, you know, a pretty good degree of public experience already. Most Uncle, meanwhile, he, in the last mayoral race, threw his hat in the ring for that process. And so he's, once again, no stranger to the local election scene. But outside of that, I think we've got a pretty interesting distinction between candidates. I don't want to speak for their positions to a great degree, but I do think it would be fair to say that Mose Dunkel is coming at things from a slightly more conservative position. But for instance, the city administrator, I think that's a defining issue between the two candidates. You know, Shelby Ronstadt was a part of the process, getting the budget passed with that in there. And Mose Dunkel, meanwhile, is one of the more vocal critics, I would say, of the position. He put a Facebook post up when the news was just coming out about this that was very widely shared. And has since been, you know, had comments on social media that I've seen attract a lot of attention criticizing this route. But, you know, other than that, Helen, I'm not sure if you have any comments you'd want to bring
up. The only comment I would make is that, and it's long forgotten, that a year ago, August, this mayor and council gave themselves a raise that goes into effect in January. And the mayor's raise is 20%. They'll be making $1,200 a month. The council's raise is 45%, and they'll be making $400 a month. I'm sure there are a lot of city employees who'd like a 45% raise.
Well, you could say also, to play the devil's advocate, that they're catching up a pretty underpaid position. I would think that if somebody's putting in the time to be on city council or mayor, certainly, they're going to put in quite a few hours.
And I recall that there was an issue. I'm trying to remember if it was this particular raise that was passed or if it was a previous one. And unfortunately, I don't have that information with me right now. But I do remember there was an issue where the benefits package that came with a council position, that the money they were council members were making was insufficient to pay the premiums, and that was one of the things that came up at the public meeting.
Yes, I think that has definite bearing on it. Okay, I did a full spreadsheet on all of the meetings for 2014 and 2015. In 2014, the average length of a meeting was 1.7 hours. In 2015, the average length of a meeting was 1 hour and 3 minutes long. Now, granted, they put in time outside of that.
Well, let me throw in another point, though. This council used to meet just once a month, but now they actually meet twice a month.
But they also used to have three committee meetings where they actually had a chance to connect with the public. Those are all gone. They have two meetings a month. This is every meeting that the city council's had in the last 2 years, whether it was a workshop, whatever, every meeting, less than 2 hour average. So if you have a 1 hour average and you have two meetings a month and you're paid $400, that's $200 a meeting. That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah. Well, we hope they do some homework
and
some research, and they're out there.
Also consider the absentee rate. The absentee rate, Councilman Rogstad was absent 22% of the time last year and 11% of the time this year. If he's going to be mayor, he needs to be there.
You've been doing your homework, I can tell.
Well, okay, I want to throw in one more issue before we're going to have to wrap it up here very shortly. But and I spoke about it a little bit earlier, there's going to be a ballot question on the ballot this year, and it is, shall the city adopt an ordinance for a 1% sales tax to complete the War Memorial Grandstand project? That actually was on the ballot last time. I think 2 years ago, yes. Mm-hmm. And it actually received a majority in approval, but it has to pass by a 60% margin. It did not get that last time. What do you think the prospects are for the sales tax to finance with the money earmarked to finance the grandstands?
Of the 28 people that responded to me, there were only two that listed this as a potential issue. One asked why the city didn't do a general obligation bond over 20 or 30 years instead of a 1% sales tax that is pretty onerous to a lot of people. The other person said, the city's known for 25 years that they were going to have to replace this. Why haven't they been putting money aside? So those were the two comments I got.
And Cam, what do you think of the prospects for this?
Or
looking ahead?
You know, I think that this is going to be probably one of the more down-to-the-wire, unpredictable elements of this election. Because it really did just fail by, a hair the last time. And one of the things that you have to consider is that the last time this was on the ballot, this was kind of a tag team effort between both Sandpoint and Ponderé. And the Ponderé measure failed pretty hard. But I feel like now that Sandpoint is able to pursue this from a more individual perspective, it may help, and this is all speculation on my part, but it may help clarify the message to some degree.
And we should clarify, it is a 1% sales tax, but it's on sales to anybody that comes into the city. So in a sense, this sales tax helps share the burden of that improvement with people from outside town. It's not that tax isn't going to fall just on city residents. It's going to fall on anybody that comes in and buys goods or services in the city.
That's one of the points that the city is quick to make, is that, you've got people coming in, they're using our parks, they're using our amenities, but they're not property owners here. They don't, contribute to any other kind of revenue here. And it's important from the city's perspective that they are able to get revenue from them to some degree or another.
Okay. You know what? We're just about out of time.
And you were right, Helen. We could have had 2 hours
yeah.
here. But we will have you back on again. Cameron Rasmussen and Helen Newton, it's been a pleasure having you on the KRFY Morning Show. And thank you for bringing your well-educated responses. I want to remind our listeners that we will have the two mayoral candidates, hopefully, on the show. So you can check our website at krfy.org, where we post our schedule of interviews on the morning show. Or you can go to Facebook, like KRFY on Facebook, and you'll get updates on those every single Tuesday and Thursday.
And let me throw out one more fact here, that sandpointelections.com, or go to sandpointonline.com, elections central. And there is information on all the candidates, as well as links to Facebook pages where we have that, or websites where they have that.
And we could possibly put a link of who will be the guests on the morning show if it's election related.
Oh, you bet.
Mm-hmm. So, because those are forums, and what KRFY hopes to always do is inform our citizens about relevant things that matter, and also entertainment and things like that. So thank you so much for being here today.
We're
just about out of time.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. And let's see, we have one song. I just wanted to mention that on Thursday on the KRFY Morning Show, Jack Peterson will be in the studio with representatives from the Sandpoint Sailing Association. They're having lots of regattas out there on the lake with a lot of wind. And on Friday, I'll be here in the studios and interviewing Patricia Walker-White, Executive Director of the Panada, and local actor Ron Ragone will be here talking about the upcoming Saturday and Sunday Panada Playhouse presentation of nostalgic World War II stories of adventurous romance. So that will be again on Friday at 8 on 88.5 KRFY. And we have just enough time for one song, and I really want to play this song. Helen loves this song. Mm-hmm. Patsy Cline was born on this day in 1932. One of the best, I have to say, and I'm sure
agree.
Most agree, voices in music ever. And she first became known by being on the Arthur Godfrey Hour in 1957 with this song, Walking After Midnight. So we're going to go off with that. We hope you have a beautiful day. This is Patsy Cline, Walking After Midnight.
And have a great week.
Yeah. Bye, Chris. We'll see you next week.